My name is John Scott, and I am an alcoholic. I've been sober since December 19th, 1982, and for that I'm awful grateful. Hey, thanks for the donation, Jesse. You know. I want to thank Craig for letting me use his spiritual kit of tools this morning, which made the donation come about. So I want to thank the committee and Lauren for asking me to share my experience, strength, and hope here at this world-renowned gala event. And I've heard about this thing for a long time, and I'm sure glad you have improved the facilities. It sounds like I can't believe Tom comes back after the way you treated him the first time, but Tom has what I want, you know. Answer to any request is always yes. That's about 4 or 5 miles past any links, I think, but that's probably why I admire you so much. You're out there ahead of the rest of us, and I appreciate it. Tom, I've known Tom quite a while, and he's a good friend, and I'm just tickled to death to be here this weekend with him and the rest of you folks. Geez, I am so stinking full. Clover and I have been eating and eating, and it's like, we don't do it. I mean, I am an alcoholic. I don't kind of do things halfway, you know. I got to do it all. We had eight, and then it's like we're afraid there's going to be a food shortage or something. So I'm just as full as a tick. I had to go take a little walk before the meeting, and now we just got prayed up and everything. So, you know, from now on, it's kind of God's deal. And it's not so much what I think I say. I think it's probably what you hear, and I don't know what you're going to hear. You know, we don't know. You know, because every time I hear what I like is when you're sitting there talking to somebody and they come back 2 or 3 days later and says, I really like what you had to say. And I ask them, well, what did you say? And they'll say something, I never said that. But apparently it was good, you know. And so I don't know what I'm going to say, and we don't know what you're going to hear. But I know one thing. I have this thing called the secret weapon that's this gray matter between my ears. And if I can kind of turn that down just a little bit. And it's hard for me to do that because I know. I mean, it's a knowing that I have. I'm sure that some of you guys got it. I know Clover's got it. It's just a knowing that you have. You know, I know things aren't true, but I love to believe in them anyway. You know, I love the liar. And the liar lives between my ears. And I listened to it, and I believed it all my life. And it's not really served me too well. And you would think with all the evidence that I have at hand that I would begin to understand that. It's like the book says, my problem is centered in my mind. And it says that the alcoholic is usually an extreme example of self-will run riot, but I usually don't think so. I mean, you can't be extreme example of self-will run riot when you're right. And I believe in being right and standing up for the things that I know is true, even though they're not true. But, you know, and sometimes I have to get into arguments with people and explain it to them about how it is that I know that it isn't true, but I know it is. And sometimes when you get to doing that, and you work long enough and you think that you've won the argument, it's not really that you won the argument. Their eyes just glaze over and they say, okay. And it's like, I used to sit back and think, well, I got that one accomplished. You know, I got that one taken care of. And I would go on and believe the lie. And anyway, that's the way I lived my whole life. And I don't know how I got started off on this, but this is just the way I think sometimes. I mean, my mind just takes me over. And I guess what I'm trying to say is all through this weekend, I'm going to try to shut it off and listen to what's being said and see what I'm supposed to learn here today and tonight and tomorrow and the next day. You know, because I'm an alcoholic of the hopeless variety, and I need to be. There are people who will back me up on this. I need to be here. Okay. So I am really tickled to be here. I'm excited about being here. I'm excited about the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because of it, my world and my life is absolutely fantastic. And if you're new here tonight, I'm sure you're just ecstatic to hear that. You know, his life is great. You know, but what about my life? You know, and because usually when I was new, it was all about me. And so I don't think, you know, if you're new here tonight, it should be any different. It should all be about you. And I'm just going to say some stuff. I'm going to tell you about what happened to me in a general way. And what it was like once I got to Alcoholics Anonymous and what it's like today. I'm a rancher and a farmer. I I have done that almost all my life. I decided for a change I needed to go join a rock and roll band for a few years, but, you know. And then I had a headshot for a while, but that, you know. I ran a booking agency for a little bit, but that was, you know, just, you know. I pushed a little dope for a while, but, you know. But, I mean, I did other things, but usually I was just a rancher and a farmer, you know. And it's like, before I ever took my first drink, I just, and you hear this in AA all the time, it's just like, I just didn't quite, there's like something happened somewhere along the line, I didn't get all the instructions. And I just kind of felt like I went through life with two left feet. And I can remember just situations that, I mean, other people seem to have the answers, they just seem to know it. And I don't even know what the question was. I mean, I can't keep up. It's like, and I don't know whether you're ADD or you're just nuts or what it is, but anyway, I just didn't have it. You know, it felt like I didn't have it, whatever it was. And I would try to be a part of the bunch, and it's like the bunch would leave me. So I'd go find a new bunch, and I'd try to be part of that bunch. And they would leave me. You know, it's like I wanted to be a part of the deal, but if it just couldn't quite get there. One night, me and a couple of my friends went and got, we got some booze. We got some beer. And I can remember the very first time I drank, I think we got 2 6-packs or 2 cases of beer. And I can remember hiding 2 6-packs before I even had a drink. Before I even had a drink, I knew what to do. You know, and I started stashing it, you know, because I didn't think there'd be enough. You know, and we drank that night, and it was one of the most wonderful, fantastic nights that I ever had in my life. I can remember. First thing we did is we was in my mom's brand new car, and we went off drinking on a dirt road, and it had rained. And of course, the first thing we did was get the car stuck. Well, that was no big problem. We finally got the car out, and then we went to this dance. And I am totally afraid of women. I loved what I heard the other day. If it wasn't for booze, I'd be celibate today. You know, and I just absolutely never knew what to do. I couldn't go up and ask him to dance because it's like all the energy in my being was to, you know, go up and ask some gal to dance, and you know that they're gonna say no, so you just, you know, why even bother, you know? But I had that booze in me, and I had that sense of ease and comfort just came at once, you know, just a few drinks away. And I could go up there and I'd ask some gals to dance, and I could dance, and I never could dance before, but something, I mean, just happened. I could start to, it's like, I finally found me. I was whole. I began to be whole. It was like that missing part was there. All of a sudden, I knew the answers to the questions. I knew what the questions were, and I knew the answers. And all you had to do was ask me, and I could explain it, just like I just gave you kind of an example of how I explained it, but it's like I felt like I was on top of the game. And I didn't care if the gal said no. It didn't make any difference. And I can remember, you know, I just had a great time. I got in a fight that night. She won. And you know, it was, you know, but it was like, it didn't matter. So I got whipped by a gal. What the heck? You know, no big deal. You know, it's like, you know, it's, you know, and I remember getting home that night, and I pulled that car into my mom's garage, and I went to bed that night, and my mom woke me up the next morning and says, "What had you done?" I was like, "What are you talking about?" She's, "Look at my car." And it was just, I mean, it's covered in mud. And lost her credit card. She gave me a credit card so I could fill it with gas. That was the last time she borrowed the car in a long, long time, you know. Oh, it's a mess. I mean, there's footprints on the ceiling. And I don't know who put the, I don't know whose feet, you know, I have no idea in the world where that stuff comes from, but it was there. That was not a good sign. I always hate those questions, you know, about what you did and you don't know. And you kind of got to, ask other people about what it was that you did the night before, but you don't want to ask them in such a way that they know that you don't know, you know? That just kind of causes friction in your life, you know? It's kind of hard to live in that situation. But I just seem to adapt to it, you know? I love drinking. I love drinking better than anything. I could feel so comfortable in a short period of time. I could have the secrets to life in a short period of time by having a few drinks of alcohol. And it wasn't very, you know, I didn't drink a long time. I drank, I don't know, I guess 10 years, maybe 10, 12 years, something like that. But, you know, it's like in a short time, that whole thing turned upside down. And it wasn't always great, but most of the time it was. But after 4 or 5 years of drinking, you know, things changed, and I got into all kinds of trouble. I mean, I can remember being surrounded by a bunch of people of the court saying that they're going to throw me away for the rest of my life, and I didn't like that very much, you know. There's a little problem with this gal that I met while I was playing in the rock and roll band. She told me she was 18, found out she was 12. That causes friction in your life too. I thought I might add that. But you know, we were in love, they told me if I didn't quit seeing her, they was going to throw me in prison. And I immediately left there and went across town to tell her that I couldn't see her no more. And I never was very smart. I really wasn't. And I found myself, running around trying to escape from her for a while, and then I finally gave up on that. And we ended up getting married, and last month we celebrated 35 years of marriage. And it's an amazing process, because most of those 35 years I hated her guts. I just want you to know that. So she my love of my life turned into be a real puke. I mean, I couldn't hardly stand it. But we just got into this deal, and the next thing you know, before too long, I ended up, when she turned 16, we ended up getting married, and I moved out to, I decided it was no longer good for a guy like me. If I'm going to be married, I need to be providing a living for my wife. And so I quit the rock and roll business, and I went back to work at the ranch, and I quit doing drugs too. I mean, it wasn't no problem. I just quit. Pretty easy when you lose all your connections, but from then on I just pretty much drank, and it's so funny how that thing just slowly turns on you, little by little. And I found myself with the woman that I loved just slowly destroying her, and I slowly destroyed everything that I stood for. And I slowly destroyed everything that I wanted to become. And it's so subtle. It's like a little chip at a time, and you don't really realize how far down you're going until one day, something happens. And on December 18th, 1982, I found myself at a bar. It was called the Keg Bar, and the Keg Bar is a kind of a biker bar, trucker bar, loser bar. Everybody in the world who had wanted to be somebody ended up drinking there who was never going to be anybody. And I fit right in, And I remember Cindy one time, we was there, and Cindy says, "What are you doing here?" And I was insulted because these people were my friends, she says, "What has happened to you?" And I couldn't figure out what she's talking about, And it wasn't about the people, it was about me. It's about what I had become. And I had become everything that I hated. I had become everything that I despised, and I didn't have any idea in the world what to do about it. I didn't even know what the problem was. I had no clue whatsoever that my problem was alcohol. I thought my problem was her. I thought my problem was my job. I thought my problem was because I didn't have enough money. I thought my problem was because I didn't have enough education. I thought my problem was because God hated me. I thought my problem was because I hated God. I didn't know what my problem was. Go ahead and answer that. We'll all wait. Got it? All right. I forget where I was at. Gosh. I gotta. Thank you. I hope you don't mind, but I gotta get rid of that thing. Between the phone calls and that heat, This is going to be a lot harder than you said it was going to be, Clover. I just got to the place where I was a zero. I was a walking dead. I was a nobody, and I knew it. And drinking no longer helped me. And I can remember, I got up. I was in the basement of a friend's house. I wasn't really sure where I was at first. It's like, how we wake up, it's like, what have I done? Where have I been? What's going on? It's like, you just total fear. Just wake up total afraid to death. And I, and your heart's racing 110 miles an hour because you don't know where you've been and what you've done, you know, just, and I know I've been, see, I'm the kind of guy that would go drinking for 4, 5, 6, 10 days in a row, you know. I would go to town for bread on Thanksgiving and come back a few days before Christmas. That's not conducive to good relationships. I got it, you know, in case you don't know that yet. It just doesn't work very well. And that's kind of what happened this time. It's you know, December 18th. It's a few days before Christmas, I don't know what to do. And I had, at the time, I had been running a feedlot. And there was a guy who came out to my feedlot who I drank with a lot, and I really enjoyed his company. And his name was Frank, and I said, you know, it was noon, and I was already drinking, and Frank came out to the house, and I offered him a drink, and he wouldn't drink with me, which is strange, because Frank liked to drink. Frank and I would get in these arguments that last for days, you know, and he kept saying I was opinionated, and I never could quite get that one, you know, and one night he told me that, and we argued all night long, and finally, about morning, he finally agreed that I wasn't, you know, but and he wouldn't drink with me, and I kept asking, what's the matter, why won't you drink with me? And finally he tells me, he says, John, it's because I'm going to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I can remember, Alcoholics Anonymous, Frank, I mean, geez, ain't that kind of overcorrecting a little bit? I mean, shoot, you, oh, you drink just like I do. And Frank goes, yeah, I know. And I said, well, what the heck's the deal, Frank? I've been thinking. I mean, my life sucks. I don't know what it is. I don't think it's alcoholism, but I got to try something. You know, how about taking me to the meeting? Oh, no, he says, I'm not taking you to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I said, well, why not? He says, well, John, he says, you're drinking. He says, Alcoholics Anonymous is for people who want to quit drinking. And you don't want to quit yet, obviously. He says, but when you want to quit, give me a call. I'll take you to a meeting. And you know, if you're new, or even if you're old and you're hearing that and it doesn't sound right, it probably ain't, but that's what happened, you know. And so I can remember waking up that next morning thinking, oh my God, this drinking is getting out of control. I almost went to AA last night, you know. I've got to get on top of this, you know. I've got to get back on top of this stuff. It's starting to get a little too deep for me. But at least I had that seed planted. And so on December 18th, when I wake up in my friend's basement and we can't find my pickup, we go down to the keg bar. We on our way to the keg bar, you know, where all my friends are and my advisors. And I can remember getting down there, and we drove into the parking lot, and I says, you know, let's go see Frank. I was with a guy named Johnny. He was about 75 years old, I think. I've been drinking with him for a long, long time. Yeah, he says, we need to do something about our drinking, don't we? And I said, I think so. So we drove down to the feed store where Frank works, and I walked in there, and I said, Frank, you got a few minutes? And, oh, he was tickled to see me, you know. And he says, yeah. He says, I got time. He says, you know, Johnny and I have been thinking about maybe we ought to go to Alcoholics Anonymous and try it out. I don't know. You know, we may not be that bad yet or something, but, you know, we don't know. You know, what do you think? Oh, he says, go out to the car. He says, I'll be right back out. I got to get these 20 questions. So he runs in the store and comes back and brings us his 20 questions. And, you know, I don't know if you guys have ever seen the 20 questions, but you can't pass it. I mean, it don't matter who you are. You know, just can't pass it. And I can remember going out to Johnny and say, well, Frank says he's going to bring us a test, you know. And so we get this test, and I cheated as much as I could, and I still flunked it bad, you know. Cause it's like if you answer, what is it, three of them, you... two of them you might be, three of them you are, four of them you're some, you know. It was like out of the 20, I think I had like 19, and I cheated, you know, as much as I could. And I knew it, you know, I know things. My secret weapon was working, and I know things. I know what this is. First off, Alcoholics Anonymous. The name is not going to, you're not going to get people coming very much, you know, just to start out with. But then on top of that, you know, you guys, with a name like that, there ain't going to be a lot of people coming. So what you've done is you've somehow devised a test that nobody can pass. And you take advantage of people who are down on their luck, like me and Frank and Johnny. And you get us in there, and within a short period of time, you make a sign on the dotted line that says you got to pay $25 for the rest of your life every month, you know, or something like that, or every week, something like that. You know, I know those things. And so anyway, I found myself, I told Frank, I don't care. Would you take me to a meeting? Well, we'd already stopped by the grocery store, and we'd already picked up some beer, and we were drinking this beer. And Frank said, no, I won't take you to a meeting. He says, but I'll tell you what, you go ahead and drink all you want to today, and tomorrow, don't drink, and I'll take you to the meeting. So we thought that was a pretty good idea, because I wasn't really too excited about quitting drinking anyway, even though I needed to. So I can remember we went down to the keg bar, me and Johnny, and I want you to know, at 8:30 in the morning, at the keg bar, there's four of us there. There's me, Johnny, the bartender, and another guy, and nobody in that bar at 8:30 in the morning could pass a 20-question test. So it was obvious. I was on the right track with my thinking, you know. And I can remember calling Cindy up sometime during that day because I drank all day long. And I can remember calling her up, and she was not happy. She hated me. She hated all my friends. And I got to tell you about Cindy. She was a pre-Al-Anon at the time, and what she did that just baffled me. I was down at the keg, and we was going through kind of a mini depression in Billings at the time, and nobody at the keg could get a job. I mean, shoot, there had been people in the keg there for 4 or 5 years that hadn't been able to work, you know. And Cindy got mad at me one time and said she's going to go get a job, and I laughed. I said, "You go ahead. You get yourself a job, you know." You know, because she was leaving me. I knew it was obvious that she's leaving me. She should have been leaving me, but, you know, I said, go get a job. Oh, that was funny. I just laughed. I thought that was so stinking funny. She came back that night, had 3 jobs, worked them all. You know, I couldn't believe it. And that's the difference between them people and us. I mean, for one thing, right there. But I need to remember that last day. I mean, I remember sitting there at the keg bar, and I was sitting over in the corner, and I'd cry. I'd cry because my life was upside down. I'd cry because I used to love my wife, but I hate her now. I'd cry because my children didn't matter much to me anymore. I'd cry because every part of my life was upside down. I hated myself. I hated everything around me. And I was alone and lonely. And nobody would drink with me. And you'd come over to drink with me, or you'd come over and talk to me, and I'd want to fight you. And then you'd leave. And then I'd cry because I was alone and lonely. You know, and that's basically how my last day of drinking was. Wonderful, just a wonderful experience. I thought I want to pass that along to you in case you're missing how good it was, you know. I found myself that next morning. I got home that night. I woke up that next morning, and I got a phone call from Frank, and I told him I'd meet him and this other guy across the street at the restaurant about an hour before the meeting started. I got over there, and guy's name was Richard that I met there with Frank, and they were laughing and joking, and they had these little ribs, these little steaks that they'd ordered, and they said, here, Art, buy a steak, have a steak. You know, I was not hungry. I was always really nervous after I'd been drinking like that, and eating was not on my agenda, and they ordered the steak for me anyway, and laughing and ate it all up. And I can remember Richard asking me these questions, these really difficult questions. He says, do you feel like you're responsible for your own actions? Now, I know that this is an elite group of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I've been trying to get in it for, 6 months now, you know, and I can't get in. And I can remember, it's like my mind was like a Rolodex, and I knew what the real answer was, but I just didn't want to say it. But I told him, yeah, I believe that I'm responsible for my own actions. He says, good. He says, now maybe you'll start acting like it. Now, this is my introduction to Alcoholics Anonymous. Right off the bat, these people were judging me, and they're, you know, it's like, this is the way I saw it. Now, I got to tell you, if you're new, that's not what really happened. But that's the way I felt, you know, whenever. I'm going to talk to you a little bit about my home group when I first got into Alcoholics Anonymous. And I don't in any way want you to think that I don't love those people because they literally saved my life. But looking back, it's funny. For me, it's funny. I can remember going across that to the meeting that night, and they ask if there's any new people, and I raise my hand, and there's a gal who raised her hand, and I've never seen her again since. And why I'm here and she's not, I have no idea. I have no idea at all. I think there's a little line in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous that I think has a lot to do with it. It says, I have to come to believe in the hopelessness and the futility of life as I've been living it. And I think without that ability to realize that the hopelessness and the futility of life as I have been living it doesn't exist in my life, I think it's going to be real hard for me to be here. And I don't know. I mean, I don't know. Some people maybe not, but in my case, that's where I was. I just could not, I could not do it anymore. I didn't know that. I didn't know whether I was going to quit drinking or not, because I quit drinking every morning. Every single morning I quit. I'd swear this is the last time I'm ever going to do it again. I will never drink again. I am never going to drink again. And like an hour or so later, it's like, well, maybe I'll have one. You know, just kind of sneak up on it, you know. And by noon I'd be having, you know, by noon I'd be drinking, and tomorrow I'm going to start. I'm going to start all over again. I'll stop drinking tomorrow, and tomorrow I'd start again. It's just day after day. And that'd been going on for a long, long time. So I had no idea in the world I was not going to drink anymore. And I can remember, got in that meeting. After the meeting, there's four or five of these guys standing around me and said, you need a sponsor. This guy named Johnny says, I'm going to be your sponsor. And I don't know what a sponsor is. I thought maybe a sponsor is somebody who paid you away for the first two or three months, you know, the $25. And later on, he's the one that you had to pay the $25 to or something. I didn't know it, but I knew it had something to do with money. I just know these things. So I found myself, getting this guy named Johnny for a sponsor, and he called me every day and tell me to come into it. He had an auctioneer place, and he'd say, come on in here. And he'd talk to me about Alcoholics Anonymous. Along about noon, there'd be two other guys that show up, and they would talk to me about Alcoholics Anonymous, drive me around town, take me to maybe a clubhouse or something. And then along about 7 o'clock, we'd go out and eat, and about 8 o'clock, we'd go to a meeting, and then I'd go to Johnny's house until 2 o'clock. At 2 o'clock, the bar was closing Billings, and he'd say, it's time for you to go home now. So I'd go home, and then the next morning, about 7 o'clock, he'd call me up and say, it's time for you to come in here. So I'd go into this auction place, and I'd stay there until about noon, and then two guys would show up. And they did this. It was just over and over again for about a week or so. Got this great big old jug of orange juice, put K-roll syrup in it, a whole bunch of vitamins, shook it up real good, and says, here, drink this. It'll make you feel better. Because I wasn't feeling very good. And I told him, after I had about two or three shots of that, I told him, I feel a lot better. I don't know. I'm not stupid, I feel all right. Don't give me any more of that stuff, please. And that's kind of how it started. And it's like, I was so skeptical. I can't even think of that. I read those 12 steps on the wall, and there's God every other step. And I thought, man, every time I turn around, this God deal shows up, because I wasn't getting along with God very good. I mean, anybody treat me the way he'd been treating me, it's just no way in the world that I could be his buddy, I was not an atheist. I feel like I was an agnostic, and that means that I believed that there was a God, but I lived like there wasn't one. And it's like God works for you, but he won't work for me. He never has. That's how I felt. Wrong, but that's how I felt. And I got to where I could stay sober for two or three days, and I'd go over to Johnny's house about every other night, after about 40 days or so, Johnny went out and got drunk. He got mad at his group and got mad at his sponsor and just twisted off. Got drunk. I couldn't believe it. Here my sponsor just got drunk. And I can remember going to the meeting that next night, and I thought, I didn't get to pick my first sponsor. And there was this little blonde that I'd been watching, and God, she had what I wanted, and I thought, I'm going to go up there and I'm going to ask her to be my sponsor. And I can remember walking across that room just like it was yesterday, and Richard come up. Richard had this three-piece suit and wingtip shoes, always stood up real straight, smoked cigarettes just like crazy because his back was bad, and he just talked real fast and always knew what I wanted, always. And I was going after this old gal, and he says, hold it. He says, I understand that Johnny's no longer with us. And I says, that's what I hear. And he says, okay. He says, I'm going to be your sponsor. And I said, well, I don't know, Richard. I don't really think that I want you to be my sponsor. And he says, no. He says, I didn't ask you. He says, I'm going to be your sponsor. And he always knew what I wanted. And within a few days, he was my sponsor, and within a few days, he'd sold me this diesel car, and he's a car salesman. And he ends up being just about the best thing in my life that I could possibly want. And I didn't realize that he had a love and an understanding of the nature of the illness of alcoholism that I have. He put me in a good place really quickly, and he would let me hurt. What else are you going to do? I mean, when you're new, sometimes it's like he'd say, some days you just got to hurt, but you don't drink. You just keep coming back to meetings, and you suit up and you show up and you just take your seat, He says, some days you just got to hurt, and that's okay. He says, because you only have to do that once like that. And that's all I've ever had to do it. I've never gone back out since I've come into Alcoholics Anonymous. He says, let's let them other people, those smart people, let them smart people stay out there in that research and development department. We'll just stay stupid and stay here. And I've tried to stay stupid and stay here, and it's worked really well. It's worked pretty good for me so far. But it's so amazing that any of us get sober. I mean, my home group, there's this gal named Millie. And Millie was a little old lady, and she, you'd call her, and she wouldn't have nothing to say. I mean, nothing spiritual or nothing. But she sat in a chair, and as long as she was in her chair, it was like there was a, it was like everything was in its place. And this is another gal. This other gal named Margaret. Margaret, you call her Margaret, and Margaret say, well, my name is Margaret, and I'm an alcoholic. And them that stay sober, or them that go to meetings stay sober, and them that don't. Thank you. You call her Margaret 6 months from now, and she'll say, hi, my name is Margaret, and I'm an alcoholic. And them that go to meetings stay sober, and them that don't. Thank you. I don't know. What a lame message this woman has, you know. I'd rather have somebody with a little flair or something, you know. And then there's this hillbilly, his name is Gerald. And Gerald's deal was, if you called on Gerald at 5 minutes after the meeting got started, you knew who was going to be talking when the meeting was over, because he never shut up. If he called on Gerald 5 minutes before the meeting was supposed to be over, it was going to be a long meeting, you know. And that's just the way it was. And it just rattled on about nothing forever, you know. Then there's this guy named Nick. And Nick was a treatment center guy who had been down in Denver for a while, and I always kind of thought they kicked him out, but anyway, he went up to Billings, and he was living up there, and he had a little short guy with a high, shrill voice, you know. There's no reason in the world for me to remember your name unless you've been here for a year, at least 6 months, you know. Why would I bother learning your name? You're just a passerby, you know. I mean, this ain't no way to treat new people. I mean, I was new and I knew that, you know. There's another guy named Rotten Ralph. Rotten Ralph's favorite deal, you know, is if you said something in the meeting, they didn't believe in new guys talking in the meeting. If you said something in the meeting, Rotten Ralph would, they'd call on him next, because he's kind of like the axe man of the group. And he would sit there, and it didn't matter what it was. He had the ability to just mow you down. And he'd always keep his dollar for the plate in his pocket. And when he gets done mowing you down, he'd say, oh, and by the way, if I made you so mad you feel like you have to have a drink, here, let me buy you your first one. You know, that's no way to treat a new guy. It's really not. You know, but this is what was happening in this group. You know, and I don't want you to think that I had a bad attitude or anything, but I might have had kind of a bad attitude. And I remember one night I walked up to Gerald, and Gerald took his hand out and shaked my hand and said, how you doing? Well, I mostly hate my wife, and I'd love to kill her, and I ain't like an Alcoholics Anonymous, and Richard's my sponsor, and sold me that car, and it don't work, and blah, blah, blah. He says, shut up. He says, I don't want to hear that crap. He says, from now on, when I ask you how you're doing, and I shake your hand, you're going to go, why, Gerald, I'm getting better in every way every day. Thank you very much. This is a rigorous honesty program, and if you're new, they had me lying right off the bat, okay? So, I mean, these are things that are happening in my first 3 or 4 months of sobriety. It's like it's just, and I'm coming, this is how sick I am, I'm coming back. Because there ain't no place for me to go, you know. And I can remember Frank and I, Frank was going to get a divorce, I'm going to get a divorce. We both hated our wives with passion, you know. And I remember we were sitting there one night talking about how this doggone, you know, marriage is not going to work and we're going to get rid of it. And old Nick comes by us behind the couch, you know, well, pour me another drink, you know. And just little things like that. So I thought, you know, I'm going to get this Nick. I'm really going to get this Nick. I'm going to get him where he remembers my name. What I didn't know, he already knew it, you know, but he acted like he didn't. And I can remember, in my best newcomer tone that I could, humble tone, I'm going to talk to Nick over in the couch after the meeting. And there's only like 8, 9, 10 people around, you know. Why, Nick, I'd like to talk to you a little bit about my program. Nick says, sure, we'll sit down. So I start telling him about how my wife is screwing me over, and he jumps up and says, listen, so you're an alcoholic. He says, now what the hell are you going to do about it? That's what I want to know. I don't care about your wife. What are you going to do about your alcoholism? And I looked around, there's people looking at us, and I just, that's it. I quit Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm going out the door, and Nick was a kind of crippled old man, and what the, I didn't even know at the time he had cancer. He just slipping out the door, you know, I was going to get out there and get in a diesel car and spin gravel. And it somehow got me before I got out the door and pushed me up against the refrigerator. He says, listen, you're wasting your time, you're wasting their time, and you're damn sure wasting my time. Why don't you go out there and get drunk, because that's all you're trying to do. You're just trying to get drunk. You're the biggest whiner I've ever heard. Now, just get the hell out of here or else get in, but get one way or the other. And Nick out of no place, or Rotten Ralph just out of no place. And here's your first dollar. Let me buy your first drink. Let me buy your first drink. No. I mean, I quit. I am done. I am through with this goofball organization. And I remember getting out in that car, and I turned it on, and I was going to spin gravel, and it's a diesel. You know, And I mean, it's just one insult on top of another, you know. And thank God I had to drive out to the ranch. I mean, it was like 30 miles out there, and I'm beating on the dash. I don't you think I was immature. I'm honking the horn. I'm yelling at the top of my lungs. I hate you. I hate God. I mean, I don't know what the hell. You know, just, I mean, I'm the kind of guy that if I thought that I could get on the floor and throw a tensor tantrum and God would see it, I would do it. You know, just so I make sure I got his attention, you know. But something happened to me on the way home that night. It's like Nick's words kept rolling around in my head, and it's, so I'm an alcoholic. Now, what am I going to do about it? Am I going to keep blaming other people for my life? Am I going to keep blaming other situations for my conduct? Am I going to start taking responsibility for my own actions, my own attitudes, my own emotions, or am I just going to live out there like I've been living, just absolutely in a cesspool? You know, this was the turning point for me. This is one of those ahas that we get in here every once in a while, a great gift. And I got that gift. And I can remember that next day, you know, I didn't know what else to do. I got in the car and I drove back to that meeting, you know, and I didn't want to go. I really didn't want to go. Because I'm going to have to hear Millie, you know, say her little, and Margaret, you know, and Gerald, you know, geez, Gerald, you know, how you doing, John? Well, Gerald, I'm getting better in every way every day. Thank you very much. You know, it's like I'll lose my integrity, what little I have left, you know, and give Ralph back his damn dollar, you know, and, you know, it's like something changed, though. There was a change that happened to me, and the knowing that I thought I knew began to break. My understanding of my life began to be torn apart, and it was such a gift. And I thought my world was over. And what the good news is, if you're in that situation, if you feel that way tonight about Alcoholics Anonymous, what the good news is, it's a paper wall. Break through it. Because on the other side is a life beyond my wildest dreams. I find myself all of a sudden having answers to my questions. I find myself being able to find relief. I find myself to where I got to the place, if you're new here tonight, I got to the place where I could go to sleep. I mean, go to sleep. Not sit there and fight that ceiling all night long. Shut my eyes and go to sleep. What a gift. You know, I was a little bit surrendered for a short period of time. You know, my ego will come back in a little while, but, you know, there was a while there. I was teachable. There was a while there that the right people were in the right place at the right. Gerald started seeing fantastic things. I mean, it was amazing. I mean, it's like, Gerald, talk another 2 minutes, you know? And it's like, other people would say, guy, he's at it again. I'd say, yeah, listen to him. You know, it's like, Jesus. All of a sudden, Gerald got a transfusion with knowing. I mean, he was great. You know, Nick become pretty decent for some strange reason. Ralph quit picking on me. I don't know why. I mean, you know, it's like all of a sudden things changed. You know, I just started falling in love with Alcoholics Anonymous, and things in my life turned. You know, Richard says, how are you doing with your wife? Well, he knows. He's been talking to Frank. Frank told him. I mean, Frank ratted on me every chance he got. And I said, well, I'm getting divorced. He says, no, let me get this straight. You're the one who's getting a divorce? And I says, yeah, I'm getting a divorce. He says, well, you quit that right now. I said, well, what are you talking about? I live with a crazy woman. She's tried to kill me, and I've tried to kill her. He says, don't worry about that. He says, right now, he says, we got the two of you kind of contained. You know, he says, if we turn you loose, if you get a divorce, pretty quick, there's, you know, right now there's only two of you. Pretty quick, if you get a divorce, it'll be four of you. 16 of you. 27 of you. I mean, it's like, he says, right now, he says, we've got you together. We don't do any drastic changes in the first year of sobriety. And that's a drastic change for you. He says, I'll tell you what, you don't know nothing about having relationships. We're going to start trying to have a relationship. And what we're going to do, you're going to start telling her that you love her. There you go again. It's an honesty program. He's got me lying again. You know? And he says, no. But he says, the trouble is with you, she knows it, I know it, and you know it. You're a liar. So what we're going to have to do is we're going to have to demonstrate that you love her. And I kind of got to thinking about that. And then I thought, well, maybe we'll get back into big bed. He says, no, we're not talking about that. He says, what we're talking about is doing things that you normally wouldn't do. We want you to start sweeping up the floor. We want you to start cleaning up your mess. We want you to start, you know, fix a dinner for her every once in a while. Take her a rose. Treat her kind. You know, that's kind of a new concept for me. Why would you want to treat her kind? You know, my job was to destroy her. That was my job. And it wasn't working. And I started to follow his, the way he got me to do it. He says, I've got to tell you something. Because I was walking real hard. I wasn't gonna treat her nice. I wasn't going to talk to her. I didn't want to tell her I loved her. I didn't want to clean up the dishes or anything. He says, now I'm going to tell you something. If you do it, and you do it right, it will drive her crazy. Oh, okay, I'll do it. You know. And I tried it, and it worked. It just would. You know, I'd go up there, and I'd open up the door. It was like the saying you've heard where the doorknob's attached to her mouth. I open the door, and she'd, it's like this crap. You know, and she said, yeah, dirty rotten this will be. And she'd been talking to herself all day long and figured out what it was that I'd been doing wrong to her. And she'd sit there and give me this list. Well, what she didn't know, I was doing the inventory for Richard, and I'd say, well, man, wait a minute, you left out some stuff. And I'd pull that inventory out, and I'd keep going. And it just tip her over. She'd just be baffled. She'd turn around and walk off, you know. And I'm, yes, you know. I got to where I was like an AA a lot better, you know. It was like amazing stuff. And another thing that's happened shortly after that, she'd go to a few meetings, and all of a sudden it's like I could see her changing. She'd go to open meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I could see her literally changing in front of me. My perception was changing. The way I looked at her was totally changing. And it was such an amazing time in my life, such a fantastic opportunity for me to just look at life differently. That knowing that I had somehow it slipped away, it wasn't there so much anymore. And I found myself just loving Alcoholics Anonymous. I found myself just having a great time. After about 2 years, Richard, he was having troubles with his wife. That's why he was in Montana. And I always kind of felt like he started following some of his own direction and went back and got hooked up with his wife down in California. And he left after a couple of years. And I don't know if you're like me, but after you're sober for a couple of years, you really don't need a sponsor. I mean, you know, you and God kind of walking hand in hand in the universe, and I can remember, you know, if I really need any help, I'll just get the group to help me out, you know, because there's a lot of good sobriety in that group, and you know. But the only thing is when you're on that kind of a course, if you're a person like me, you don't ask the people who are really well. You have to sometimes ask the people who just walked in about whether or not I should do this. And you always, if you're like me, you will always find, you might have to go to a different group, but you will always find somebody who will agree with you. And that's all I need, one person. You know, they may still be drunk. And if they say, yeah, you could do that, I'll go do it, or I'll try to do it. So I went out and I bought myself a farm with no visible means of support. And the reason that I was able to do this is because of a banker friend who happened to be in AA, you know, and he was new, I was new. We're not asking any old-timers about this stuff. We're just doing it. And anyway, you want to talk about a wreck. I mean, I ended up buying this ranch, some machinery, this farm, some machinery, and some stuff like that. In about 45 seconds, everything that I bought went... It was just upside down. So for the next 3 years, I'm on the verge of bankruptcy. You know, I'm fighting the bank every single day. Now, this is the way my mind works. And since I'm in a group of guys only, I'll tell the story. It's my girl in the white dress story, and this is the way my mind works. The bank didn't even want me in the main bank anymore. They told me not to come in there. It was embarrassing for them. They wanted me to go over to what we called the dyer pen, and that was the place where people who were in trouble financially went, which was several blocks away from the bank. Well, I go over there, and you know, they say, well, we're not going to take your house, your car, your job, your farm, you know, and everything this week, but we're probably going to do it next week. This is how it went for a long, long time, for month after month after month after month. And I begin to think, you know, I'm only like 3.5 years sober now, and I'm beginning to think, you know, I'm worth a lot more dead than I am alive. My family would be a lot better off with me dead than I am alive. I mean, my self-pity had come back. I was in charge of my life. That was what was going on. The main thing is that I wasn't asking God for help. I was doing it myself. I was in charge of my life. Look at me. Look at what I've done. I've gone to AA. I've got a ranch. I'm in business. Ah, blah, 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 blah. Me, me, me. And it's like it just caved in. And I don't look at it as a spiritual problem. It's a material financial problem, not a spiritual problem. You know, AA is good for your drinking, but it's not good for your business. I mean, really, come on. You know? And so I find myself just absolutely insane with this business that's going broke. And I'm thinking about suicide at 3.5 years of sobriety. I mean, I haven't stuck a gun in my mouth in over 3.5 years. And I'm a failure now because my wife can't stand me because I'm 3 years sober and I'm treating her just a little better than I was when I was drinking. Just a little better, not much. And she's wanting out, and she needs to probably be out. And I'm not a good businessman. And to tell you the truth, I'm not even a good AA because I don't really believe in God. You know, I just kind of believe in God. I believe that you believe. And they told me for a long time that'll work, and it does. But I don't really believe in God, not really. And this is the way my mind works. I'm thinking about suicide. I've had enough. I leave that office of that guy. I get on that elevator and I'm going to go blow my brains out. Now whether or not I'd have done it, who knows? But the thing is I get down. This is how fast my mind works. I get downstairs. I get in my car. I go around the block. It's springtime. This gal in a white dress, no slip on, goes walking in front of me between me and the sun. I'm sitting there for 2-3 hours thinking about the girl in the white dress. And it's like, what was I thinking about before I saw the girl? Oh, yeah, suicide. Somehow I just couldn't get back into the rhythm of my job. But, I mean, if that's how my mind works, then my mind is truly out to kill me. Alcoholism has everything it needs to kill me, and my mind is on its side. So what I have to remember is that my problem is centered in my mind. And somehow I got to get to the place where I'm willing to believe that this thing is broke. And I have to have somebody in my life that says, John, you need to turn left now. Then I will turn left. You know, I think it's really important. I got this attitude that I simply know. And it's killing me, but I don't want to give it up because it's like I'm afraid I'll lose my freedom. See, I don't understand that discipline equals freedom. Self-will run riot equals the bondage of self. It's a hard one for a guy like me to get because I know, and I really, truly don't know. So I find myself going to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous and working the steps kind of, and I'm kind of being an AA, and I'm going to meetings, but not much, you know. Finally I ask this old guy what should I do? My life is upside down. He says, well, I'd start out by going 15 meetings a week. 15 meetings a week? He says, yeah, 15 meetings a week would be good for you, for a start. I said, hell, I've got a business I'm trying to run. How's it going? Oh, So I started going to 15 meetings a week. And I started, and he asked me how many people I was sponsoring. I lied, I told him two. There's only one. He's crazier than I was. And needed to be. And I ended up picking up people because he said you need to sponsor people. And it's kind of a little, for me, sponsorship has really helped me out a lot because when I sponsor you, somehow I can see what's happening in your life and I can fix that part of what's happening in your life in my life because I'm willing to, somehow I can see that. If I'm looking at me, I don't see it. But if I look at you, I can. I did an inventory with a guy one time talking about burning his house down because he hated his wife, which I understood, and I thought you goofy, you know, I never said it to him, but I thought, you were sick, you know, and it dawned on me, I tried to burn my neighbor's house down, but that was different, you know, that was different, you know, but I never thought about that, and so as you continue to work with people, you find out, at least for me, I find out how sick I really am. And when I see other people go to meetings on a real regular basis, I see them get better. And so I keep going. I still, to this day, I'm going to 4 meetings a week, every single week if I can. I mean, unless there's something coming up, you know. And I mean, rarely do I miss that. I sponsor a herd of guys. And I want to always be able to say yes to an AA request because it's the thing that keeps me straight in the head. It keeps my head small. You know, does that make sense? It just allows me to be teachable, which is so important. I think one of the biggest traps I think that happens in Alcoholics Anonymous is after you've been here for a while and you get it. You know, you ever, anybody here over 5 years and got it? You know, more than once? You know, it's like, I'm there. And when I'm there, I don't, you know, I've already been a good sponsor for a while. And I was a GSR and an IGR and a secretary and and I kind of forgot why I was going. I'm going because I'm an alcoholic of the hopeless variety. I'm a little bit touched, you know, And I forget that. I think that now because I'm sober and I've got the same mind that I came in here with some 20 some years ago. But it ain't any better. I mean, it's really not. The truth of the matter is I live better because of the disciplines of Alcoholics Anonymous. I live better because I have a sponsor, I have a home group. I'm accountable. I treat my wife like I love her. I treat my children like I love them. I treat my job like it's important. I treat AA like it's number one in my life because it is. Have you ever noticed when you treat things like that, they become important? I mean, think about this a little bit. I'm the kind of guy that goes into the bathroom. Day is going good. Love my wife. Children are great. Thank God they're gone. You know, it's like everything's wonderful, and I'm sitting down on the toilet. I look down at the toilet paper. She put it in wrong again. Everybody knows how the toilet paper is supposed to be on, and that's not it. She's always been against me. She has always tried to screw me over. Every single chance she gets, she humiliates me in public and in private. She has always done this to me. Every single day of my life, I don't know why I put up with it. And I open that door and I come out of there just, you know, I can't figure out why she don't love me. No, that's hard to love. That's hard stuff to love. And I'd like to tell you that happened 20 years ago. That probably happened last summer, you know. I just don't know about it, you know. Wasn't you there? Well, kind of. I mean, it's like I have blackouts when it comes to that kind of stuff, you know. And I have to remember that I have to be accountable to people and to her, you know. And when I start treating her with respect, she gives me respect back. And it doesn't happen later. It happens right then. When I start loving her, she loves me right back. And it doesn't happen later. It happens right then. When I start treating her with dignity, it doesn't happen later. It happens right then. When I do the same thing with Alcoholics Anonymous, when I start treating Alcoholics Anonymous like it's the most important thing in my life, it becomes the most important thing in my life. Isn't that amazing how that works? See, my mind is out to kill me. And it's like I need to take those actions that keep my mind square, keep my head square, because we're like fighters. We're like boxers. There's going to come a fight for every one of us, probably more than one for most of us. And the thing is we have to be in fit spiritual shape to take care of that fight when it comes. It may be tonight for somebody, it may be 2 weeks for somebody else, it may be 5 years for the next person. We have to be in fit spiritual shape. We're not like the boxer who knows that the date is going to be, you know, September 15th. We fight a different kind of a fight. It's a spiritual fight. And that spirituality of ours has to be in shape. And I don't know of any other way in the world to keep spirituality in shape for an alcoholic than working with new people and showing up to meetings and being accountable, picking up cigarette butts, taking care of the coffee, making the commitments, saying yes to an AA request and doing the things that we need to do. treat Alcoholics Anonymous like it's important. Treat Alcoholics Anonymous like your life depends on it, because it does. My life depends on Alcoholics Anonymous. But what's really neat about Alcoholics Anonymous is when I do that, I have the best life I could ever dream of. It's important for me to do these kinds of things, and I think it's all for me, but I got to tell you, my daughter ended up going to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous because Jim Shaw said she was an alcoholic. You know, now it wasn't because Jim Shaw said she was an alcoholic. Jim Shaw at the time was my sponsor. She escaped one night out the window and come back drunk, and I knew this had been going on for quite some time. My wife wouldn't see it, and I finally, you know, it's like told you, you know, she said, "Well, I'll go to AA." You know, you got to be out of your stinking mind. She's like 14 years old. You don't need to go to AA. You're not an alcoholic. You haven't drank enough. There's no way in the world that you could be an alcoholic. And Shaw says, "You take her to meetings." Jeez, you know, how humiliating. You know, I don't know if you guys have this problem, but I have this image management problem every once in a while. And you know, and so I don't want to do that, because, I mean, it makes me look bad, you know. It's like I'm a bad dad or something, you know. Like if I had, it's like, what am I thinking about? You know, the book talks about what alcoholism is. The doctor's opinion talks about an allergy coupled with a mental obsession. I understand allergies. I got allergies. I'm allergic to apples, bananas, cherries, and avocados. I take a bite out of an apple, my face swells shut, my chest swells shut, and I can't breathe. That's all there is to it. You know, I take a drink of booze, I break out in spots. You know, Denver, Colorado, you know, Wyoming, you know. And so what I need to do is I learned really quickly about apples, bananas, and cherries, and avocados. I learned really quick. The doctor said, don't eat them. You know what I did? I don't eat them. I don't ever get this overwhelming feeling when I look over and say, "Oh my God, look at those people over there. They have fruit salad on their plate." You know, my God, why me, Lord? You know, why me? You know, I don't get that. It doesn't bother me at all. It's like they got fruit salad, so what? But you get a guy over here with wine. Now that's a different story. I'll sit here and I go, "My God, look at that wine. Why can't I drink wine?" And then if I ever think about it, when I drank, I hated wine. It always made me sick and puked. You know, my job is whiskey two at a time, keep them coming. That's what I like, not wine. But yet my head will sit there and sit, you know, it's just like the girl in the white dress or the toilet paper. It's the same kind of thinking. And so I have to realize, you know, dang, out of here, you know, get out of here, that thought. I couldn't get it through my head that she was an alcoholic. I couldn't get it out through my head that she had an allergy to alcohol, just like I do. It doesn't matter how much I learn about apples. One of these days, if I eat a bite of an apple, tomorrow, it has nothing to do with my knowledge whatsoever. My face is going to swell shut, my chest is going to swell shut, and I'm not going to be able to breathe. If you take a drink, if you're an alcoholic like I'm an alcoholic, you take a drink tomorrow, and the same reaction is going to happen that happened whenever it was that you first got sober. It's got nothing to do with willpower. It's got nothing to do with self-knowledge. It's a chemical reaction to an outside substance. And that's what we got. And somehow my mind, the same mind that thinks like I've explained tonight, it thinks that this time, based on what I know, how long I've been sober, or who I am, it's going to be different. And it's not. I'm going to have that adverse reaction to it just like I've always had. And I sit there and I just thought, you know, there's no way in the world that she can be an alcoholic. And I got to tell you, tonight she's got, I mean, not tonight, but right now during this period of time, she's just got 15 years of sobriety and she's been sober. And she hasn't had to drink. You know, it's what an amazing process that we have here. Not only do we get to help ourselves out, but we get to help our children out and our friends. The people around us, our wives, our kids, our moms, our dads. Whoever it is that we touch, you know, I'd a lot rather be on this side of the fence than the side I was on before I got here. I can remember my mom one day coming up to me, and I said, "Mom," she says, "somebody broke in my house and stole all my guns." And she says, that was me and your dad. I says, "My God, what the hell's wrong with you people?" She says, "We're afraid you're going to kill somebody." I says, "Mom, if I'm going to kill somebody, I'm going to use this one right here," you know. And I thought nothing of it, and I can remember that expression on her face. Now that you know, I was like, Sean, what do you do with that? And I got to tell you something. My mom to this day still calls me up. Says, you still going to those AA meetings? Whatever you do, you keep going to those AA meetings. That's a good deal. You know, that's a good deal for you. You keep going. You know, so I'm going to keep going. If you're new here tonight, I'm going to tell you something that's really, really important. It's kind of one of the secrets around here. If you haven't heard much of anything else, I hope you hear this. I think Margaret was right. Them that go to meetings stay sober, and them that don't. Thanks.
Thank you, John. Thank you for the story. We need to talk to the person who did these formats because they used real small typeface, and it's. I don't know. I don't know what that says. We're going to have snacks down in the cafeteria room in just a little bit, so don't wander off and. May we close the meeting with the Lord's Prayer.
Exactly.
Cool. I don't know.
Line back.
Big circle.
Circle.
Big circle, man. Big circle.
Next.
No.
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. Thine is the kingdom, and the power, and the glory forever. Amen.
Yes.
That's exactly
what a storyteller.
That was good.
Yeah.
Real good.
Brian?
How you doing?
Thank you.
Good job. My brain about what I could add to yesterday's talk, and I'm sure there's a lot, but it's not coming to my head. So, I don't know what you're going to get this morning. I have no idea what I'm going to talk about, but I know I'm not going to talk about sex because I absolutely know nothing about that. I guess what kept coming to my head all the time this morning was a series of thoughts, and I'll try to express them. It's, first off, I want to say that I really, really, really appreciate being asked to be here. This has been a great weekend. I've had a blast. I hope that I just absolutely love Alcoholics Anonymous, and I hope that if you're new and you're not sure whether or not you want to stay, or if you're old and you're not sure whether or not you want to stay, you just stick around a little longer. You know, it's that old story about don't leave 5 minutes before the miracle, but I'll tell you what, you know, you stick around here for a while and you see a lot of miracles. And I love Tom's talk last night, because that hope, that absolute hope that I got when I first came to Alcoholics Anonymous was just, you know, I at least I knew it had worked for you, and maybe there's a slight outside chance that it might work for me. And I am so thankful that I was sick enough and slow enough to follow somebody else's direction to until I kind of got rid of my head. And one of the things that I was wanting to talk about this morning, and I know in this group there's some people that knew Shaw and knew that the work he did, and I was talking to Tom this morning about one time we were together, and it was at the Montana State Conference, and it was the night that Jim died, and Benoit called and told Tom, and then he told the rest of us, and the next morning Tom got up and gave a talk on your legacy, or Jim's legacy, or our legacy, and what you said and what I heard is probably different, but what I heard is Jim, the work and the effort that Jim did, and how important it was to perpetuate the message of Alcoholics Anonymous, and how one man can make a tremendous difference. And we kind of know that anyway, but it was like I got to see it in Technicolor. And this is a rippling effect of that man, this conference here, because Calvin put it on, and Calvin was one of my brothers in sponsorship at that time. And because of Jim, there's a conference in Montana called the Beartooth Mountain Conference. There's a conference in L.A. Called the Mountain High Conference. There's the Canyon, And there's there's different groups that have sprung up around. There's one guy in his quest for sobriety, and how important it is for each and every one of us to, we forget this. We forget that we make a difference. That's him, and that's what he's doing. But every single one of us, it's like, I don't think we really realize how important it is for each one of us to stick our hand out to the new guy. How important it is to put your own room. How important it is to give him your phone number. To be at that meeting when you said you was going to be there and do what you said you was going to do when you got there. Those are just basic things, and sometimes I think we get away from that kind of thinking because, most of us are ADD to begin with, it seems like, and it's like we forget why we're here, And I thought for the longest time the reason I was coming to Alcoholics Anonymous is so I could get help. And that's really one of the bigger reasons that I'm here. But whenever I begin to realize that if I'm willing to give of myself, and if I'm willing to be of service to other people, that's when I really get to help. So when I start helping somebody else, or when I start being concerned about somebody else's well-being, then all of a sudden my life changes. And I guess that's one of the things that's rolling around in my head this morning is about how important it is for each single one of us to make sure we watch over each single one of us. I'm in this thing for the long haul. I want long-term sobriety. I am very interested in long-term sobriety. When I first got here, I looked at the steps on the wall, and I thought, 30 days, maybe 60 at the most. There were some old-timers in that group who were really, really brain dead or something. They had a book, 164 pages in that book, and there are some of them guys in there 20, 25, 30 years old that are still trying to figure out what the first 164 pages of the book was talking about. And I thought, 2 weeks, maybe a month. And I got to tell you, that book changes. The more I read it, the more it changes. Because it seems to move along with me as I move through sobriety, The first step means something different to me today than it did when I first got here. But it means the same. Today I'm powerless over alcohol, and today my life is unmanageable. All myself and by myself. Today I need a power greater than myself to restore me to sanity. Today I need to turn that will and that life over to the care of God as I understand them. Today. And for the longest time I think I was in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I thought, well, I did it then. And I don't need to do it now. It's like it's done. And I think it's an ongoing process for a guy like me. And I think I think we have been given such a great gift. And if you don't feel like you've received it yet, it's not a hit or miss thing. it's not a deal where you might or might not get it. It's a deal where you will get it. If you do what we ask you to do, if you do what is outlined in the first 164 pages of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And you know, it was wrote by a bunch of drunks from the East Coast to begin with, so it don't make a lot of sense. You know, so that's why I need to have a guy in my life, a sponsor in my life, to kind of guide me through that maze of words that I think I know but I don't. And that's why it's so important to have a sponsor, because I don't think I try to work the steps by myself just like about everybody else has. I don't know why it'd be any different. And it's like, it just doesn't work. I don't even know what they're talking about. And I need somebody in my life to help me do that. And I've heard this before, you know, I stand on the shoulders of giants, but I stand on the shoulders of giants. Truly do. I mean, Richard, my first sponsor, that Johnny, he got drunk in a short period of time, but he taught me. He showed me something in Technicolor. He had 7 years of sobriety, and he showed me how dangerous this disease is. I mean, how you can think you have it and you don't. You know? And Richard, who taught me time after time after time about how important it was for me to treat Alcoholics Anonymous like it was important. He says, it's an amazing thing. If you treat it like it's important, it becomes important. It's like, you know, it's the same thing with everything. And you kind of, this AA is kind of like spirituality 101. You know, and I begin to learn that if I treat Alcoholics Anonymous, it's important. Like it's important, it becomes important. If I treat my wife like she's important, she becomes important. If I treat you like you're important, you become important. It's an amazing process. What happens in the meantime is I feel better about myself. I quit worrying about what I ain't getting and get excited about what you're getting, and the thing changes. It's such a goofy thing because it's a mindset, it seems like. You know, if my problem is centered in my mind, the program of Alcoholics Anonymous is helping me in my mind with my problem, I believe. Alcoholics Anonymous doesn't tell me how to stay sober. It tells me how to live sober. And I don't know how to live sober. I have a mind that simply self-destructs out of, you know, well, like I told you about the toilet paper yesterday. I mean, those are something. I mean, this is big stuff for me sometimes. I have gone to war over little, you know, problems like that. You know, it's like, I hate to admit that I'm not shallow, but I am. I am just absolutely, that's who and what I am. But somehow when I'm with you, my wife has got a lot better chance. My people that I work with on the job have a lot better chance. You know, it's a rippling effect. And Alcoholics Anonymous affects all parts of my life. It doesn't impart, it's just not part of my life, it's all of my life. And I am hoping that whenever, in the end, my legacy is a legacy of recovery, and is a legacy of hope. There's a legacy where people can say, well, at least you made some kind of a difference. Because I got to tell you, when I got here, like Tom was talking about his legacy, I was worthless. I was really worthless. And for the first time, it says in the promises, life will take on new meaning. It has taken on tremendous amount of meaning. Now here's the kicker, I guess. It doesn't really matter whether or not I leave a legacy. What really matters is how am I doing? How am I doing now? What am I doing now? What am I willing to do now, and what am I not willing to do now? I think is important. My sponsor Richard used to say, you know, I get crazy. You know, I know that nobody else in here just gets nuts over nothing, but I just get crazy. You know, just crazy about, you know, I'm going to lose my ranch, or I'm going to lose my farm, or I'm going to lose my children, or I'm going to lose my wife, or it's like. I need to have a crisis in my life just to make sure I can still have a crisis in my life type of a deal. And he would say things like, okay, we're going to get pretty spiritual here. I want you to hold your hands out in front of you. And I would, he says, okay, now reach around behind you and grab your ass. You know, and he'd say, okay, now try to bring your head into the room where your ass is since we found your ass. And I mean, that's, you know, I mean, that's so stupid. That's so stupid. But I gotta tell you, when I start to live in the here and the now, when I start living one day at a time, one minute at a time, some things happen to me. my ego somehow subsides. Its job is to make sure that I remember that I am supposed to be full of regret, self-pity, remorse, guilt from the past. Its job is to make sure that I'm totally afraid of the wrong and live in anxiety. But if I live in the here and the now, if I live this one day at a time thing that we got going on here, my ego is fired. It doesn't need a job because God's in charge of my job, my life at that point. Because I heard the noise say this one time, it really made a lot of sense. She says, live under God's umbrella. And God's umbrella is here and now. Here and now. And so, what that means is whenever I step up from here and I start getting into tomorrow, or if I get into the past, God don't live there. God doesn't live there. God lives here and now. And whenever I can bring my head where my ass is, all that I know that's course, but it works. It works for a dirt farmer. You know, if I can do that, then all of a sudden I'm not packing around that bondage of self anymore. I'm not carrying that load, that crap that we, you know, and it's like, I don't want to give this crap up, it's my crap, you know, type of a deal. You know, it's like, yeah, my life is upside down, I hate my wife, I hate my kids, I can't stand my job, but I don't want to give it up, not really. I don't want to turn it loose. If I turn it loose, who will I be? Probably happy, maybe. you know, but we can't do that. We just, it's like, I know my life is crap, but don't fool with it, you know. And it's, I don't know, I mean, that's the way I was for years. I had this deal about my wife. I absolutely despised her. I hated her. I literally tried to kill her a couple of times, and she literally tried to kill me a couple of times. And I'm 4 years in sobriety, and we're not happy. We're not happy even a little bit. The reason that we're staying together is for the kids, which, the, you know, kids are all neurotic, but, no, you know, it doesn't matter. You know, we're together. And one day, I mean, I had talked to so many old-timers in that group that whenever I started to show up, they started to walk the other way. They didn't want to hear it again, because that's, you know, it's like, and she did it, and none of that, you know, it's like a broken record, you know, it's like, you could fast forward it, and it's the same thing, just like it was the last 20 times, you got to the same spot, you know, and it's, and they would, you know, one guy told me one time, says, well, keep it. Everybody who wants to drink needs a resentment, and you got a good one, keep it. You know, because that way, when you go up to the bartender, you say, bartender, I need a drink, and here's why. See it? It's her, you know, and so that kind of slowed me down a little bit, you know, and I finally got to where I allowed the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous to work, and I started to deal with this resentment that I had, and I got rid of it. But it's like I couldn't get rid of it, because if I get rid of it, I won't be me. You know, when I finally gave it up, and, you know, I was always worried about what other people were going to say when I finally forgave her. Now, what would they think? What would they think about John if he forgives her, his wife, after doing what she's done? What would they think of John? You know, no ego involved there. You know, and you know, when I finally gave it up and when I finally got that out of my system, you know, not one person came up to me and says, well, I see you forgive Cindy. You know, it didn't happen like that. It's like our marriage just got better. You know, and we started to change the relationship that we had. We both knew that the relationship we had sucked. And neither one of us is willing to change it. Well, I shouldn't say neither one of us. I think she was trying to, she worked a heck of a lot better program than I did at that time. You know, I wasn't willing to give up on the idea that I could forgive her. You know? And I don't know if I was willing to give up on the idea that I could forgive myself. And some of you guys knew this guy. His name was Jimmy Williams. And he told me one time, he says, the hardest thing you will ever do is forgive yourself. And I thought, what a crock. You know, what? I mean, come on. But I kind of think that probably the hardest thing you ever do is forgive yourself. You know, to find out finally that I am really one of God's kids. And he forgave me a long time ago. And somehow I got to get this through my head that I don't know. I just think I know. I have this ability to know things that aren't true. Like I told you the other night, I just think I know. And he said another thing that made a lot of sense to me. As long as you think you know, you're never going to know. So I love Alcoholics Anonymous because Alcoholics Anonymous allows me to come in here and strip away those things that I think I need. It gives me things that I never thought I'd ever need. It allows me to be a part of. It allows me to be one of. It puts me in a place where I can be of service and usefulness to others, even though I knew that that's not what I ever, ever wanted. You know, it allows me to, it allows me to perpetuate a message that not only say, not only gets us to where we don't have to drink anymore, which is phenomenal, but it puts us in a place where, like Chuck C. used to say, it puts us in a place where we are introduced to the good life. Now, I got to tell you, this is the good life. My life today is beyond my wildest dreams, and I know you've heard that over and over again from all kinds of different people. But I feel today like I have a conscious contact with the power that will solve my problem. And it doesn't matter what the problem is. The biggest problem I have, usually, is not the problem. It's me trying to fix the problem. And if I can just allow myself to step back and allow God to do His work, then all of a sudden there's such a peace and ease and comfort that comes through that, knowing that He's going to take care of me, that I can usually see the answer. But if I am personally involved with my ego out there 110 miles an hour, it's pretty hard for anybody to get past that, including myself. You know, I feel like I am so richly blessed because I was dumb enough, if you will, to stay in Alcoholics Anonymous. You see, I really thought you guys were really a bunch of losers. I really did when I got here. And I thought, man, I tell you, I was so embarrassed. I was so embarrassed to walk in my first meeting of Alcoholics. And I was so thankful that you went in a back door in an alley to this meeting. You know, I mean, what would happen if somebody sees John going into a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous? Now, 2 weeks earlier, when I was peeing in the flower pot in the lobby of the Northern Hotel, it didn't bother me at all. And somebody walked up and tapped me on the shoulder. You know? But I am now going to Alcoholics. I didn't want anybody to know that I was going to try to improve my life and get my marriage back together and start being a father to my children and being a good businessman. I didn't want nobody to know that. But I had no problem letting everybody know that I would be willing to screw up my life in 5 seconds or less just because of something that I thought that I had to have or knew I needed to have. And, you know, it's such an upside down and backward society that we have here. And it's the last place in the world that I would have thought that I would find anything that would teach me how to find a power greater than myself. And yet it's exactly what it's done. Little Millie, one of the gals I talked about the other night, sitting in her chair, never say much. She'd always sit there and she'd say, John, look at all the miracles. I don't see no damn miracles anyway. Oh, what are you talking about? You know, they just kind of come up with them goofy sayings that don't mean nothing. But I got to tell you, if you're willing to stick around, and if you're willing to help others recover, and if you're willing to finally put your ego aside, and if you're willing to follow direction, and if you're willing to seek out a power who will solve your problem, and it says he's not hard to find if you start looking for him. And I found that to be true. I promise you, you will start seeing all kinds of miracles show up. And this has been for me one of them. So thanks.
Thank you, John. Appreciate you.
Alright, we're now going to go back to call up participation. I've got about 30 people to call on, so when you come up here, try to keep your whatever you say down to about 2 minutes if you can. First will be Don W. from Sepulpa.
Don, and I'm an alcoholic. And tomorrow I'll have 30 days sobriety. Service work. One of the guys from my group, I was laying in the hospital about dead, wishing I was dead, with a broke neck. Had my son and my niece in the car with me when I had a wreck and been drinking. And I was laying there, I was miserable, wanting to die. And everybody was wishing I had died. But one guy, he knew how miserable I was laying there in that hospital bed, and he come up to see me and gave me some hope. And the next day I got out of the hospital, and him and two other guys from the group were there, visited with me, gave me a big book, and said, one of us will be by to pick you up tomorrow evening for the meeting. And every night since, well, every day, two or three people from my group calls and sees how I'm doing and all that, and every day somebody from my group has been there to pick me up and take me to a meeting. And it's great. I'm grateful to each one of them. I'm grateful to this program. Thanks.
Gene S. Sepulpa. Gene S. Not here. Okay. Gene S. Sepulpa. Is there a Gene anything from Sepulpa? Well, I'll scratch that one off. Wayne J. Shawnee.
Hi guys, I'm Wayne, I'm an alcoholic. I've been sober since 2013-96. It's great to be here, and I want to thank the speakers for coming. I really hope that I can take some of this, what I heard and take it with me and use it. And I was able to sharpen some of these spiritual tools that I have, that I choose to use them. And that's what this program is about. I brought my higher power here, and I know you guys bring yours, and I feel when I come to these things, I feel a greater presence of God in my life, and it's great. You know, and I see the same faces every year. I've been here quite a few years, and I see those same faces, and you know, those people as me are the winners. We've talked about the winners and losers, and I was told in Alcoholics Anonymous to hang with the winners. And the new guys, my suggestion, if you want to find out how to stay sober, talk to us. What I related to the most is the young guys staying sober. Those guys that had 5 and 10 years, I couldn't relate to. You know, talk to Juan and maybe Tom, and find out what they did to stay, to be able to come back to this thing. And I'm grateful to be here. Thank you.
D.G. Tulsa.
My name is D.G. Holmes, and I'm an alcoholic. I've been safe, sane, and sober since May 25th of 1972. I want to thank our speakers, Dynamite, both of them. My kind of people, active, in the mainstream, still out there doing the deal. Good examples for me. I want to answer one question. I get a lot of this. People say, "How old are you really?" Yeah. Well, the answer is real old. But just to give you an idea, this is just an example. If you were to look at my Social Security card, it's numbered 76. Now that's old. Okay. And one other thing that I want to clear up. You heard it from the speaker this morning. You know, he doesn't know anything about sex at all. You know, when I go to my men's shag meeting, and I come in a meeting all peppy and bounce around, you know, and say, "Hey man, I got lucky last night." Everybody giggles and laughs because they know that what that really means is I found my car in the parking lot. I'll say I was blessed. God put me in the right place at the right time. The very first meeting I ever went to, I heard a guy say the expression happy, joyous, and free. And I thought, my God, That's what I've been looking for all my life. I was never able to articulate those three words together. And that's been my quest. All these years, I want to be happy, joyous, and free. Coming to meetings like this, participating in activity, my sponsor says action is a magic word. And I believe that. And we all get exactly what we need. I heard a quote the other day. It was an anonymous quote, and it struck me, and it's so very true for me. It said that in our lifetime, hundreds of people literally go through our lives, stay for a while, and then move on. There are people who come into our lives who put their footprints on our hearts, and our lives are never the same. Now, I've had a lot of those people put their footprints on my heart. A lot of people, I love the young men in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, at my age, as we know, you know, most of our peer group is gone. You guys are like my sons, you're like my grandsons, and I love to watch you grow, I love to see you participate. I mean, you keep me young, you keep me active, there's a reason for me to keep coming back, and I love it. And you know, as my sponsor tells me, you know, if I'm going to be happy, joyous, and free, I've got to keep doing the same things that I did when I first got here. He also tells me that I've just never had it so damn good. And I just like to pass it on because I really feel, with all my heart, everybody sitting here, regardless of where you are in your life, you just never had it so damn good. Thank you.
Steve A. Sepulpa.
My name's Steve Allwine. I'm from Sepulpa, and I got sober 17th March of this year. I want to thank my sponsor and speakers and all you people here. You know, it's been very spiritual for me. This is my first conference, and I just feel so warm and fuzzy and stuff. I met a lot of people here that's just been so nice and talking and you know, want to just pull me in and accept me, you know, for who I am and stuff like that. And I appreciate all the people that's here, especially the ones that, you know, sit down and just talk with me and stuff like that, because, you know, before I was all full of myself, and you know, it's not like that anymore. And I just appreciate all y'all being here, and thank you.
Colin H., Tulsa.
I'm Colin. I am an alcoholic. Great deal. I mean, I did not want to come. I live with five gentlemen, and coming hanging out with 100 more just isn't my idea of a great weekend. My sponsor lived with his wife, and he was pumped to come. Simple kit of spiritual tools. That's what. I got sober. I crawled in out of the weed patch April Fool's Day, 2004. Tom talked about the street drunk. That was me, and I didn't think you were really a drunk unless you lived out in the lean-to and flew a sign. I'm learning. The simple kit is what my group teaches me every day. You guys teach me how to live. You guys make me reach out to the newcomer, even though I don't want to. A year ago at this conference, a friend, now, I didn't like him then, been bouncing in and out of the group for a year. He had 3 days when he got here. Guy in my home group came up and said, you've been there. I need you to talk, like you to talk to him, see if you can help. So I talked to him, and if I was going to be honest, that meant I was going to have to do something, and I did not want, I didn't like him. I didn't want to work. But I did what I could for the guy. God took over. This guy celebrate a year. I mean, you guys were doing the 12 step every day of your life. You're 12 stepping us. Mike, congratulations. That's a miracle. I didn't give you a chance in hell. Mike, God took over. I'm proud of you, man. Thank you guys for 12-stepping me when I got here, and something's happening good in here. I'm glad I'm here today. Life's good.
Ryan D. Norman. Ryan Drag, alcoholic. Sober since 10/30/2000, and it's been a great conference. Thank you to the committee for putting it on. I was definitely looking forward to it, and I had a good time staying out here. I brought a foamy mattress to put on because I was afraid that the mattresses wouldn't be big enough, and they didn't even have mattresses. It felt like I was sleeping in port, you know. And I just had a good time just hanging out with the guys and just no distractions and just listening to some great speakers and some good fellowship and good food. And it's just been a great oasis in my crazy life and my busy life. And I'm gonna take a lot of things with me, you know, a lot of challenges to prove where I'm at, to try to give back more, to try to grow more, and basically just try to stick around and be a better man. And that's what I pray for, and that's what needs to happen. Because if it doesn't, you know, there's a lot of people that was here at the last conference with me that aren't here anymore, and there's a lot of people that are still here, and I just want to do the things that the people that are still here up doing, and that's a challenge, and that's it. Thanks for letting me share.
Matt Ian Norman.
My name is Matt Melman. I'm an alcoholic. I'm sober since April 28th, 1993, and thanks for calling on me. I it's always good to see Tom and to see John out here, and it's there. I look around at the people that are ahead of me on the path, and I think, I want to be like those guys. You know, I want to do that, and always learn so much when I come to these things, and I get to be around the people I haven't seen, and the friends that I've made over the years, and it's a neat thing. You know, this conference is a neat thing, and Alcoholics Anonymous is a wonderful, wonderful program, and it's a great way of life. And I sponsor a guy that I got a report on that somebody said he might be, having a little drinky poo between meetings, and that really kind of bothered me. You know, I started thinking, it's why is it that some people are able to get to that point of surrender and some people aren't? You know, what is it that makes us surrender and then take that surrender back? You know, that's the thing, is how do I get to stay here? And the thing is that we've talked about it this weekend, is that working with others and that constant thought of trying to carry the message on to somebody that needs it. And tonight in our home group, every one of our home groups tonight, there'll be some new guy that may come in that's sick and dying and wants to change and doesn't know how to do it. And I think that we have an obligation to try to carry that on, and we have a responsibility here to try to pass this message on. You know, I think that, one of the most supremely selfish things I think any of us can do is just sort of, get ours. You know, just get sober and then just, I don't have to do anymore, I've seen examples of people that have done that too. And, I don't want to be like that. I want to be somebody that's active and involved. Because when I look at Tom, and I look at John, and I look at Steve, and I look at some of these guys that have stayed active for years and years and years, I think, that's what I want to do. And I want to be somebody that can be counted on to be there. And I don't know what will happen. You know, I don't know if that'll be the case or not, you know, 5 years from now or 10 years from now. I don't know. But I just know that for today, I just want to stay in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I want to stay an active member of my home group. I want to stay an accountable member of my home group. My sponsor always says, you know, what we do in Alcoholics Anonymous is we just take care of each other. You know, we take care of each other and we help each other. And, you know, sometimes my sponsor is taking care of me and he doesn't feel like he's taking care of me. And, you know, it, you know, when I'm hearing the truth about myself, you know, sometimes that doesn't feel good. But, you know, it's what I need to stay here. Because, if I, you know, my mind will lie to me and it will tell me things that are about myself that are just untrue. And, you know, and left unchecked, that'll run me right out the door. And, you know, and I hope that's not the case with the, you know, that guy that I sponsor. You know, I hope he's, you know, I hope he is able to get honest and come clean with that and turn his life around and get surrendered again. But, you know, I can't help that. All I can do is just stay here and be an example. And that's all any of us can do. And I'm grateful to be here. Thanks.
Michael S. Glenpool.
My name is Mike Shoemaker, I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is June 10th, 1994, but I am grateful. This has been an awesome weekend. I love this stuff. I get up here, I hoot, I holler, I yell, I scream. We play mad croquet and softball, and we talk about fellowship, and we talk about the fact that, thank God, we're still alive. You know, we sit around and we tell these war stories, we talk about it, you know, but inevitably, the conversation winds up at, thank God we're still here. You know, I don't know about you, but I know I should be dead. I was 6 feet under the ground, or in prison for a long time. Some of the things that I've done to God's children out there. And when I came to you, if you were to tell me my greatest, most valuable gift that I was going to possess in my life was going to have no money value to it at all. And it would mean nothing. I can't pawn it. I can't sell it. It means nothing to anybody else, but it means the absolute world to me, and only I can give it up, and that's my sobriety date. That's the day that I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, and God said, son, here you go. This is yours. You can have it. If you maintain it well, you can hang on to it for a long time to come. And somebody asked us last night, we were talking about it, talking about my friends that have come in and done the deal, and they're not here. The guys that I grew up, nobody. I got a call. We talked about Sean last night. I got a call from him. He called me over the weekend. I don't know. He sounded kind of squirrely, so I'll call him when I get home. And he said, why are you here, Mike, and they're not? Why is that question? I know why they're not here. They didn't do the work to maintain the gift. They got the gift. Everybody gets the gift. As soon as I walk in, and I walk up to my sponsor, and I say, I don't know. Please help me. I get that gift. And it's been several times in my sobriety. I've come close, so close to losing that gift. But something happened to where I became hopeless once again. And at 9 years sobriety, I found myself sitting on my sponsor's doorstep an hour and a half away at 7 o'clock in the morning in tears crying. Because I said, by God, I'm going to lose this gift. I sat in my living room in my kitchen talking on my phone, arguing with my sponsor and defending my rights. And it scared the bejesus out of me. And after I walked in my room and seen my wife and my children, and I thought, my God, I'm going to lose it all. I'm going to give up that one thing that nobody can take away from me. And my sobriety has been rejuvenated since then. I became a newcomer. And 9 years sobriety as a newcomer. You know, we were talking last night, and I'll say this and I'll shut up. We're going to get together and start spending more time together. And I'm like, I want to come. He lives an hour and a half away. I'm 45 minutes away. He said, we need to start spending time together, one-on-one, eyeball time. He said, we'll work it out. I'll come up there. You can come up here. I said, no, I'm coming to you. You want what I got. I'm coming to your house. There's something about the act of me getting in my car and driving an hour and 45 minutes to my sponsor's house and sitting in his living room. There's something with that action that allows God to get in the middle of it and I can hear him. Thank you.
Did Gary C. make it back? Okay.
Bobby D. Norman.
Thanks, Bobby. I'm an alcoholic. Body date, September 14th, 2002. It says I'm from Norman, but I'm actually a member of the Choctaw Rebellion Dogs. There's a few here. You know, I'm very grateful for the speakers who've come and shared their experience, strength, and hope with us this weekend. It's meant a lot to me. I'm also grateful for whoever had a hand in that brisket last night. That was awesome. And the spaghetti Friday night. To everybody that's had any part of the, you know, the coffee and the cleanup and all that, you know, everything that's made this conference run smoothly, I just want to say thank you. I appreciate you.
Brent B. Norman.
Brent Berger, alcoholic. Sobriety date is April 3rd of this year. This time of year is always pretty crazy for me, and you know, like Bobby was talking about last night, my sponsor, you know, he really didn't say you need to be here. But I've learned this weekend that there's a difference between being forced to do something and having something strongly suggested. So that was exciting. When I got here, I wasn't really sure if I wanted to be here, if I needed to be here, or something like that. And not 5 minutes into being here, Coy looks at me and says, "Brent." I'm like, "Yeah, you know, I've never met this guy in my life." He's like, "How you doing?" I'm like, "Well, I'm good." He's like, "Do you remember me?" I'm like, "No." He's like, "You've been to court, right?" And I'm like, "Yeah." And he's like, you still don't remember me?" I'm like, well, maybe." He's like, "No, I'm just messing with you." And I knew from that minute, you know, I was in the right place, you know. So, but I just want to thank all you guys for being here and for having this great conference this weekend. Appreciate it.
Brian R. Norman.
My name is Brian Reiswig. I'm an alcoholic. I've been sober since February 12, 2005, and for that amount of time, I'm extremely grateful. And I stand here in front of you today, finally, a grateful alcoholic. You know, when I came here, I didn't really come here because I thought alcohol was my problem. I had been dry for a while before I got here, and I didn't have a program. And trying to drink without a program is a bad place to be. A bad place to be, because your head is going a million miles an hour like all of ours do, and you've got nothing. You've got no alcohol, you've got no program, you've got no spirituality, you've got nothing. And February 12th, about 2:30 or so in the afternoon, I called the AA hotline because I just didn't know where else to go. And there's a man here, and I'm going to steal his thunder. He's probably going to get mad at me if he does. I'm sorry. He answered that call. And I'll be forever grateful because he answered that call. And it's Greg. He's sitting right here. He took the time out to call me back and talk to me and get me calmed down a little bit. And he said, "We got a meeting tonight. Can I come pick you up?" I said, "Well, I live in Purcell. Do you really want to drive to get me?" And he said, I'd be there. I said, "That's okay. I'll meet you somewhere. Just tell me where to meet you." And when I saw him that night, he kind of had this puzzled look on his face, is kind of a strange look on his face. He said, "You know, out of all the 12-step calls that I've made and somebody told me they were going to meet me somewhere, you're the first one that actually showed up." And I'm just grateful that this program allows you people to not give up, to not think that you're not doing your job or something is not right when people don't show up. You know, that book doesn't say that we got to make people show up. What it says is we got to share the message. We got to give what we've got. We've got to be willing to carry that message. And if we're willing to do that and let God worry about the results, we can keep carrying the message. And Greg, I thank you for that.
Chase.
Thank you. I'm Chase Rutherford. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi,
I've been sober since January 26th of 99. And I just like to thank everybody. Thank you for the food. It's been good food. And thanks for everything else. Thank you to the speakers. It's been great speakers. I'm just glad to be here. It's been a great weekend. I don't want it to end. I've heard a lot of stuff that I can take back with me. But I think the one thing that's going to stick with me the most is to bring my head into the room with my ass. that's good stuff right there. I don't know. The thing that helps me the most is every day I try to be better than I was yesterday, and I don't know, that reminds me that, you know, I'm not special, and I'm not a great person. I'm just a drink away from being a piece of crap, and I'm grateful to be here. Thanks.
Dave H. Shawnee.
I'm Dave. I'm an alcoholic. I've been sober since the 11th of December 2002, and you know, I really enjoyed this conference, everything that was shared, you know, ditto to everybody. And one of the things, I think the thing I'll take away from this conference most is about being able to make a difference with other people and their lives and stuff. And when I want to make a difference is this next time, like I get cut off in traffic, I can try and act a little bit different than I usually act. Or, you know, like I'm behind that idiot in the line in the grocery store that can't find their pen or their checkbook or whatever, and I want to go off. And one of the things I really want to make a difference is when I'm shaking hands in the front of my group, that I don't find myself in the back of my group or in a corner practicing character assassination and those type of things. You know, because I'm guilty of those things, and these are things I need to work on. But you know, I can make a difference. We all can make a difference. And that's what I'll take from this conference. Thank you.
David G. Norman.
I'm David Gardner. I'm an alcoholic. I've been sober since February 1st, 2000. And just like last year, I was looking forward to this conference, and I was really looking forward to it again this year. And it's been a great weekend. And when I was new, this was my first conference also in 98, and I wasn't looking forward to it then. In fact, I couldn't wait to get out of the damn place about halfway through it. But back then, you know, I was having a hard time being here, but I was having a hard time being anywhere, really. The only place I felt safe when I was new was that 1 hour I'd spend inside a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. The rest of the time I was out there, and my nerves were shot, and I didn't have a program and didn't have a whole lot going for me. But Alcoholics Anonymous has turned that around. I'm more of a whole person this year than I have been, and I think since I was a kid, really. You know, and it's a debt that can't really be repaid. You know, I can try, but it's never really going to happen. And I appreciate you guys, and have enjoyed your company. Thank you.
David H. Norman.
My name is David Huntington, and I'm an alcoholic.
My sobriety date is November 28th of 1994, and I'm very grateful for that time. When I first came into AA, I was afraid of dying. One of the things I'd been afraid of for a long time, I drank for a long time, was I was afraid of dying drunk. And I came in on that was a Monday with my first sober date. I'd been to the AA meeting the day before that, and had already had two drinks before I went to the meeting, so I didn't realize what it was. And I decided then that after I got in here for a while, I thought if I could just make it to 30 days, and if I could die when I got my 30-day chip, I'd be happy. And it scared me because I didn't want to die. And my life has changed. I'm looking forward now to... I work with people, a lot of new people whenever I can, and I enjoy life. I'm happier than I've ever been in my life. I still have problems, but all of us have problems, and I'm very happy to be here. This is my first meeting in this particular group. I thought about it several times before, and I'd asked somebody about it, and they said, well, you have to stay out there in the cabins at night, and I was unable to do that due to some medical problems I have. And I asked my sponsor this year, and he said, you don't have to tell anybody about that. Just go home when you're through. Go home and sober and do what you need to do. And that's what I do. And I help people as well as I can. I'm married to a lady who is a month and a half ahead of me in AA. I belong to the Phoenix group, and she did too. And we've got a marvelous life now. And my life was really in a hell of a mess until I met her. And we don't sponsor each other, we help each other. And it's, I'm going to shut up, I've talked long enough here.
Eric L. Mormon.
I'm Eric Lester, I'm an alcoholic. I've been sober since August 18th of 97, and I'm extremely grateful to be upwind from Clover right now. It's been killing us over there. I've really enjoyed the speakers. It's the first time I've heard your talk, and I appreciate you coming and sharing. And Tom, I've heard your talk. I was probably one of the people that could finish your story for you. And you're the went to labor of love. When I was brand new and you were speaking there, and I didn't know what it was, but you know, now I know that you had this sense of ease and comfort about you that made me want to go a couple months later to Texas and hear you there, and you know, you're just a hero to me, and I appreciate you lighting that path. And I think one of the biggest things that I've heard this weekend was John reading something right out of the Big Book was When All Else Fails, Intensive Work with Alcoholics Will Save the Day. And I've always, for some reason, said When All Else Fails, Working with Another Alcoholic Will Save the Day. And you know, this last year I've had like six or seven guys that I've been working with for a while and going to meetings and had a sponsor. And, man, something was missing. And I think it's that intensive part. I think, you know, these guys do what they're supposed to do and they call and everything's good and blah blah blah, and I really remember going on 12-step calls, and you know, we went to this house one day and a guy called us and wanted us to come out, and we drove way out by the lake and started pulling up this driveway to a trailer house, and the lights go out and we were like, oh no. And we went ahead and knocked on the door and heard some rustling around, and we hear the guy go, shut up, woman, they're going to hear us in here. We pretty much knew it was time to leave, you know, he wasn't coming out, but you know, I feel good whenever I've gone on 12-step calls when I'm, you know, driving home knowing that I did my part, and I think that's what I've been missing. You know, it's easy to separate yourself, even, you know, being around a little bit, it's easy to separate yourself from the guys, from your peers. And that's one thing that always makes you remember who I am, is working with new people. And I think this has been a great conference. I was looking forward to it, and I had a great time. Thanks.
Greg A. Norman. Okay, we will not call on Greg A. We're going to have a break. Is it time? Okay. We're going to take a picture and we're going to sign the banner. That would be this one.
Paul,
yes, sir.
Have you called Byron up?
Yeah.
He's on yet?
Yeah, we sang happy birthday to him last night.
Okay.
So we're cool. All right. You want to call him up again?
No,
I will.
Well, I'll tell you what, if you run out of names and you're going back over,
okay.